Welcome to MTG Pro Tutor, your gathering of insights, tips, and advice from renowned players and community icons. Connect with venerated teachers to gain the knowledge you need to improve your skills. Now, here's your planar guide and personal tutor, Sean Penrod.
And we're back with episode 160 of the MTG Pro Tutor podcast. We had Christmas over the weekend here in the United States and many other countries, I'm sure, as well. And it was a blast. Oh, my goodness. We got so many fun games here at the house that I'm going to have to be playing a lot of those. And I just can't wait to do it. It's going to be a blast. This is always a fun week, I think, of the year where Christmas is just behind us and New Year's is right there on the horizon, which is going to be another excuse to throw a fun party and just be with friends and family. So love it. I love this time of year. And I'm so grateful that we have guests that are coming onto the show right now and taking the time out of their schedules to do interviews, and so we can continue to bring you awesome tips and tricks to take your Magic game to the next level. But before we dive into today's interview, I want to say thank you to the patrons. It's been a blast getting to know you better and connecting with you this year, and I look forward to doing that even more in the new year. So thank you, thank you, thank you. If you want to be a patron of the show and support it directly, you can go to mtgprotutor.com/Patreon and choose to pledge any amount you want per episode. You can also set a monthly max so you never go out of budget. And then each and every month, I do a drawing to where I give away a Magic-related product to one of the patrons. So if you want to be considered for that, go to mtgprotutor.com/Patreon. There really isn't much else to talk about here at the top of the show. I just want to give a thank you to the patrons. Thank you to all the guests that are coming on the show this time of year. And just express my joy of this season. I just love this time of year. It's a lot of fun for me. Even though there's not a lot of Magic stuff going on, I think that's all right. Get a little bit of a break. Spend some time with people doing other things, and then we'll dive into it hard in the new year. So we have a great guest, like I said. And without further ado, let's dive in and talk about Magic. What's up, everybody? I am super excited to have our guest with us today. Our guest was a finalist at Grand Prix Indianapolis and made top 8 at Grand Prix Denver. He's a silver level pro, soon to be gold. Coming to us from Las Vegas, prodigies near and far, let's welcome the one, the only, Rob Pisano. Rob, how you doing today?
How's it going?
Are you ready to delve into your mind and share with the audience tips and tricks to take their game to the next level?
I sure hope so.
Excellent, excellent. Now, all you prodigies out there, if you want to connect with Rob, the best place to do that is on Twitter. He's at Rob_Pisano. So really easy, straightforward, easy to find. Reach out to him, say thanks for being on the show, ask him a question. He knows a lot about Magic, and we are going to dive into that right now. So Rob, we'd love to get to know you a little bit better outside of Magic first. So are you born and raised in Las Vegas, or are you transplanted there for some other reason?
So I'm originally from New York City. I moved out here about a little over 8 years ago to play poker for a living. Quit that about 4 years ago, and now I'm a software developer. So,
now, what part of New York City are you from?
Like, kind of the Bronx, Yonkers area. Went to college at Manhattan College in Riverdale.
Yeah. Very cool. I lived in New York City for 2 years, but I never really went to Manhattan or Bronx. I lived in Brooklyn for like 3 months, and then I lived in Queens for over a year, and then Little Neck, which is right on the edge of, you know, Long Island, for 6 months or so. I love to say, I love handball. Did you play handball?
No.
You didn't? Oh, man, I loved it. That was so much fun for me. I get up in the morning, go with some friends, play handball, and that's what I miss about New York for sure, is the handball.
I miss the food.
Excellent, excellent. So came out to a much warmer climate, Las Vegas, did poker for a couple years. Now, was that before or after you met and married your wife?
So I met my wife out here in Vegas. She's from Kansas City originally.
Excellent, excellent. All right, so we went out to Vegas, just did the poker thing, met a special woman. Now you're doing software development, you said, for like a big company that we know, or you just kind of do small apps, or what's up with that?
So I do development for Caesars Entertainment. So they're the company that controls Caesars Palace, most notably, and some other casinos like Rio. So they have the World Series of Poker and whatnot.
Okay. Excellent. Oh, wow. So good. So that's neat. Kind of still in that Vegas scene, but a lot more behind the scenes. So
yeah,
very nice. Excellent. Well, we love learning about your story outside of Magic, but then also we want to dive into your story in Magic, obviously. And we would love for you to tell us the story of the first time you ever saw or played with Magic cards. So take us there. We want to be right over your shoulder smelling the cards. When did you first play Magic?
So I think I was about 12 years old at the time. I was in junior high, so the game was about 3 years old at the time. I think Mirage was the latest set to come out. I don't know, I was just instantly drawn to it. I've always kind of been really competitive and into strategy and all that kind of stuff, and the cards were sweet. I loved the art on them, and I just got really sucked in.
Nice. What set was that? What was your first set?
I think Mirage was the latest set to come out at the time.
Now, what's been your favorite set since then?
Oh, that's a good question. Probably, so Cons of Tarkir is what got me back into Magic in 2014, and that I love that set. Like, just the whole flavor of it was great.
So back into Magic, what was your gap before that?
I think I quit around Apocalypse. So, I don't know, whenever that was, 2002, 2003.
Wow, yeah, big gap. That's like me. I played back when I was, 14 maybe with some friends, I fell out for many years, and I came back just before Innistrad. So, yeah, very cool. Along the same lines, what's one of your favorite cards?
Probably my favorite card right now is Jace Vryn's Prodigy.
Now, real quick, for those of us who don't know, what is it, what does it do, and why do you like it?
He is a creature, mythic rare from Magic Origins, one on blue casting costs, tap, draw a card, discard a card. After you discard that card, if you have five cards in your graveyard or more, he transforms, or you exile him and he comes back as Jace, Telepath Unbound, Planeswalker, plus one, minus two power on a creature until your next turn, minus three, you basically snapcast your instant or sorcery in your graveyard, just flash it back. And the ultimate, which I've done a few times, gives you an emblem that every time you cast a spell, you mill your opponent for five.
Excellent. Now, why do you like that card?
It led to a lot more... I thought it was a very skill-testing card. While he was individually powerful on his own, a lot of looting decisions were quite tough. I know at Grand Prix Oakland, I definitely cost myself a match by, looting improperly. And just the fact that not only is he a looter, but once you, get to the later turns with him, he gives you this value of flashing back your best spell in your graveyard and, or potentially is just a win con in and of itself. It's just cards really sweet. I just love it.
Sure is. And it took everybody on the price train for a little bit, going super high and then coming down a little bit. And
Luckily, I was very early on.
Good for you. Yeah. So you played way back in the day, had a big old gap. Then you came back. And what is it that got you back? You said Cons of Tarkir, you liked it, it was sweet. But one day you woke up and said, hey, I used to play Magic, let's go check it out. Or what was that kind of coming back story?
So I have some friends I play video games with, and... my closest friend that I actually met when World of Warcraft came out in 2004. So he's one of my oldest friends, and I know him, just met him from a video game. He played Magic, but he only played Commander, and he'd always talk about it. And he'd watch Star City and watch Legacy, and we'd talk about Legacy. And, just talking about it with him really kind of got my juices flowing a little bit until, the time was right where, I kind of was comfortable in my job and had some free time, had some money. And I felt the time was right to, get back into it. I never really lost the love for Magic. It just kind of,
Yeah. Other things going on. Yeah.
Yeah. I had college and work and then poker and all that other stuff that Magic kind of, took a back seat until, finally, had a chance to
dive back in. Excellent.
Yeah.
So, with your, experience with Magic, what makes it fun for you? What was that? What's the hook that has kept you interested all these years? And now here you are, playing at a very high level, going to big tournaments, doing very well, and doing what we want to do. What makes Magic fun for you?
The most fun I get is just the challenge. I've done a lot of things in my life, and nothing quite, scratches that itch like Magic does. That gets me thinking in ways just in terms of innovation and strategy that, coding or poker even, or anything else just did not quite come close. And to me, that's the biggest thing, is just the challenge it gives you.
Very neat. Now, when you came back to Magic and started getting serious about it, what was an aspect that you struggled with, but that you eventually overcame?
So an aspect I struggled with was most likely, just learning how to lose well. Obviously no one likes to lose, but it's really hard for people to have fun even while you're losing, and to make sure that your opponent's having fun even while you're losing, or even while you're winning too. It works both ways. I think that at the end of the day, it's a game and everyone should be having fun. And if they're not, then it's a problem. So I think I definitely struggled with, you know, if you don't draw land for five turns in a row, or like, you know, they hit their one out card in their entire deck that beats you, or whatever the case may be, it's very easy to just fall into it and get frustrated. And, you know, maybe, you know, you don't offer the handshake, or maybe you don't, you know, say nice things to your opponent. So I don't think I ever like openly berated anyone. I hope I didn't, but yeah, I definitely would get sour when I first came back to Magic, and it definitely took me a while to get out of that habit.
So one, that's good on you for recognizing that. And I know many players, myself included, have been there, you know, where things start going south and I start going south, you know? And so what have you done? What are some of the things that you've done to have fun even when you are losing?
I think a big thing is to just be social at the table. Like, it's not, I mean, yes, especially at high stakes at the Pro Tour, at Grand Prix, it is cutthroat. You definitely do want to win at all costs. But at the same time, I think just understanding there's another person on the other side of that table and, you know, just interacting a little bit and just being friendly. I think, just opening up a little bit and just saying, you know, make a little joke here or there, you know, just kind of makes it so that when you lose, it's not, you don't take it as poorly, and vice versa. If, you know, you're being friendly with your opponent, they're less likely to be pissed off when they lose.
When you win, right. Yeah. Yeah. Helps take the sting off of losing, for sure. Excellent. Thank you for sharing that. Now, as you have gone through Magic and started getting, you know, serious and learning, who have you looked up to? Who are your Magic mentors? Either people that you've known in person or people that you just respect from afar. Who do you look up to?
So I'd say the most notable person to me. So when I started playing competitively, like in early 2015, David Williams, actually, I guess, he's busy, so he kind of fell off the train, and he was playing some PPTQs and some Grand Prix trials maybe. And I really, really connected with him as a former poker player myself. And he kind of helped me out in terms of getting to that next level of where I wanted to be, and playing some matches with him, I just felt that, trying to put this in words. Like, I definitely learned a lot from him, is what I'm trying to say.
He's like a really big poker guy, right?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
And now he's a chef too. I don't know.
Oh, my goodness.
Master chef. Yeah.
Oh, I think I did hear that. Yeah. Awesome. All right. So you looked up to David Williams as you were coming up, and you got to play with him, you said, and learn a lot.
Yeah. It's actually funny. My first PPTQ win, I think, was in June 2015. And I beat him in the finals. It was Modern Masters 2 Limited.
Wow. Well, it's always fun when you get to, play people that you respect. And then when you beat them, you say, hey, maybe I know a thing or two.
Right.
So, yeah. That's awesome. That's really neat. So your journey through Magic, similar to everyone's, has ups and downs. But those ups and downs are unique to you. And so we would love to dive into two stories. The first being your worst Magic moment. And then what did you learn from that experience?
I'm trying to think. Probably the worst experience was my second Pro Tour, the most recent Pro Tour in Hawaii. I was in a situation where I was 11-2, and I just needed to win one of my next two rounds, and I could have drew into top eight, and I ended up losing both. And on top of that, I lost in the last round for five more pro points, so I ended up going 11-2 into 0-3. So that didn't feel great. I mean, it felt nice to, since I had the 11 wins, I still locked up the invite for Dublin as well. But at the same time, it's pretty soul cleaving to get that close to top eight and fail. But
yeah. So what happened? Were they, you just outplayed? Was there some misplays? Like, obviously you're a good player. You got there. And so right there at the end, two winning ends, missed them both. What kind of happened there?
Yeah. My opponents just had really good draws. Honestly, I played against, in round 14 and 15, I played against two white red aggressive decks. The first was, I hope I don't butcher his name too badly, but Makis Matsoukas, the Greek player with the white red token deck. He won the die roll. Kozilek returned his board away on turn three, But on his turn three, he had dealt 13 damage to me. So when he untapped and played Gideon, that was pretty much that game. So then game two, I kind of got blown out by a card I've actually never seen before that match. It was, Jesus, I can't even think of the name of it. It gave all his stuff indestructible. That was the crux of it. It was a board state where if I main phased my Kozilek's Return, he'd still have an Inventor's Apprentice on the board. And I also wanted to play around getting bushwhacked again. So I said go with my Glint Nest Crane with the intention of blocking and then Kozilek's Return so that I would get the Apprentice too. Because he had a key, not key, not Kia City. He had a clue. So usually when you Kozilek's Return that deck, it's like servos and, you know, artifact creatures that go away. So then the Apprentice goes too. But this time he had a clue. So yeah. And so I passed, blocked, and played my Kozilek's Return, and he blew me out with that card. And I think it's on camera, me just stopping and like reading the card.
Is this a real card?
Reading.
Yeah, I'm not as such a high table, obviously, but I've been there where I was like, I didn't even know that card existed. yeah, that sucks.
Yeah, that kind of sucked. Then round 15, similar situation where I actually took game one, and then games two and three, he had, you know, one drop copter stuff on turn three, turn four Gideon, and actually game three, I activated my Marvel, and his board was a copter, Gideon, and some stuff, and the only card that was relevant was a Kozilek's Return. So again, I killed his board, but he still had the copter and the Gideon, and I was at 9 life, so he just played a, you know, veteran motorist, and that was lethal. Yeah, that was tough. Yeah.
So what were you able to take away? Because obviously, you know, we want to be able to learn and grow and improve. So what were you able to draw from, you know, this experience where you barely missed top 8 of a Pro Tour?
So actually at the time, I wasn't that disappointed with the result. I felt that I was getting pretty lucky in earlier rounds. My draft deck on day two was not good at all. And, you know, I had in the third round of that draft, Zach Elsick, my opponent, he flooded out. So I kind of got lucky to 2-1 that draft to be in the position I was in the first place. So I wasn't that disappointed at the time. But, you know, looking back, it's like, man, I was, you know, if that Marvel has a, you know, Eldrazi in it, I'm probably in the top 8. it's kind of tough to look back and not be like,
yeah,
what if.
Yeah, you know? What if, exactly. But that's good that in the moment you had good perspective. You say, hey, you know what, like, variance is part of the game, and I've been running pretty good so far. You know, I didn't have the strongest draft, but I was able to 2-1 because variance fell in my favor or not in the favor of my opponent. And so understanding that, hey, you know, this time around, my opponent's got the draws they needed, and that's that. And so I respect the fact that you know, recognized and in the moment weren't like super salty and upset about it. And of course, we look back and say, oh man, so close, what if? But it's one thing that I have really taken away from other interviews is the long perspective helps, you know, knowing that that's not your only chance at a Pro Tour, because obviously you're going to be going to Dublin and stuff like that. And knowing that you'll be able to, you know, try again in a future event, I think also really helps when you have that long perspective.
Yep, definitely does.
That's cool. That's really neat. So on the flip side, the second story we want to hear is your proudest Magic moment to date.
Proudest Magic moment. It's tough. There's a lot of them. But I'd say just getting on the Pro Tour the first time, I top four a regional Pro Tour qualifier in California. It was kind of epic how I finally got there. My opponent was Mike May, who recently top eighted a Grand Prix. So I'm proud of him for getting on the tour himself. And we played a rally mirror that took easily 2 hours. Maybe that's exaggeration. Maybe like an hour and 40 minutes or something like that. And we didn't even go to three games. So it was a pretty epic showdown. And I was a little emotional at the end because I really wanted to get on the Pro Tour. It meant a lot to me. So I actually came close at the previous RPTQ and lost in the last round. It meant a lot to me. And that 8-hour drive back from the Bay Area was very good.
What did it feel like when you qualified for the Pro Tour that first time?
Oh, I mean, It's got to be one of the happiest times I've had. And I was there with a friend of mine, Wes, and I just gave him the biggest high five I've ever had. And it was a great feeling.
That's awesome. And you said it meant a lot to you. What did it mean to you?
So I feel like I missed an opportunity the first time I was playing Magic at playing competitively, because I was younger. I kind of, the idea of traveling a lot and traveling alone in particular didn't really appeal to me. So I didn't actively pursue, getting on the Pro Tour. I think I did okay at some PTQs and stuff, but to me it was more about like the booster pack prizes and stuff like that. I wasn't seriously trying to get on the Pro Tour, and I feel like I would have been better off if I did try to get on the Pro Tour, because it's just a great environment. You're playing with some of the smartest people in the world. You're just getting challenged on such a level that nothing else can really compare with. And yeah, I just kind of regret that.
So you definitely, when it came around and you made it, it just sounds like you were so elated and happy and just felt validated for the time that you spent in dedicating to the game. That's great. Rob, what is your best format?
My best format? Based on results, I'd say probably Modern. But lately I've been doing well at Standard. I think the thing with Standard is you need to, it's changing so much. You need to actually like play it a lot to stay up to date. And Modern, I feel comfortable enough with the format and it doesn't change enough that I just tend to put up pretty good results usually.
But that's a perfect dovetail into like the next question, which was, how do you effectively prepare for an event? So let's talk about both with you today. So let's do Modern first. What does your preparation for a Modern event look like? Let's say there's a big event coming up in Modern. How far out are you doing what, and what are you doing leading up to it?
So in Modern, you don't need a lot of preparation if you're already well-versed in the format. So the big question you always need to ask is, what's changed in the format since the last big event or the last time you played it? And for example, with Grand Prix Dallas, the big change was the Kaladesh cards that made Dredge very strong. So my preparation for that tournament was to focus on Dredge as public enemy number one. And it was popular on Modo, and it ended up being, I think, tied for the most popular deck, I think, along with Infect or Bant Eldrazi, I forget which. So that's really all it comes down to, is just understanding what the meta shift is going to be based on previous printing. Sometimes it's not at all. Sometimes a set comes out and you're like, yeah, there's not really any cards that are Modern playable in this. It's not really going to do anything. Mm. And in those cases, you just do what worked before.
So what do you play in Modern?
So most recently I played Breach. Right now I'm kind of up in the air. I don't really have a pet deck. Last year I played Amulet Bloom almost exclusively. So when that got banned, I kind of was twisting the wind a little bit, trying to find a new deck. And I just kind of stumbled onto Breach, and it was great for me at Indy because I ended up finishing second. Yeah.
So you're looking around, you say, what's changed since the last big event? And we're talking about Modern here. Do you take the deck that you normally take, that you normally play, and tweak it? Or do you go out and find another one? Like, what do you recommend for people who are approaching a Modern event?
It depends. First preference would definitely be to stick with what you know. Modern is a type of format that you could pretty much do whatever you want, and there's a lot of very solid strategies. While they might not be tier one, like Corey's Grixis deck, for example, it's not, no one's arguing that it's a tier one deck, but in his hands, it quite possibly could be. You know, that's what he's good at. That's what he's always played. So I think that's important to try to stick with what you're doing. Sometimes a deck will come out, or, you know, some cards will get printed. For example, earlier in this year with Eldrazi, some decks just could not beat that deck. So if that's your pet deck and it loses every time to a deck that half the field's playing, yeah, it's time to find something new. So,
for sure. Now, how does that compare to Standard? The switch over there, because that's the other one that you said you're doing well with right now. If you have a big Standard event coming up, how far out are you doing what? What are you doing leading up to it?
Normally, I did not prepare as much as I should have. And for Denver, I definitely switched it up. And I got in a lot of reps. The thing with standard that I always found tough was testing a lot can be tedious. You only have X amount of decks. There's only X amount of cards. So, you know, it's hard not to get discouraged when you play so many matches and you're like, all right, this matchup always goes this way, or this, you know, I can't ever beat this card and they can't ever beat this card out of my deck. So you have a lot of that, and it can sometimes be tough to like actually stick with it and play a lot of games and find some nuances with the format. So with Denver, I played quite a lot of leagues with Blue White Flash, and I felt really comfortable with the deck, and I felt like I was on to a winning strategy when people were saying some matchups were supposed to be unfavorable that I had great records against. So like Green Black Delirium, for example, people just kind of have this idea that, oh, well, you know, Liliana is good against it, Grasp is good against it, so therefore, you know, Ishkana is great against the deck. Like, it should be a bad matchup on paper, but in reality, I was just, you know, tempoing the deck out and just finding ways to win. And I felt like this standard in particular, I mean, aside from some goofy games where turn four Armor Cool just wins the game on the spot, there's quite a lot of play to it, and there's, I think, in particular, Smuggler's Copter makes for a lot of interesting decisions. Sometimes people will like bluff that they have a way to kill it, or, you know, you need to determine like, all right, can I, like, how bad am I losing this game if I activate my copter and they just kill it right here? Like, do I have nothing else going on, or can I afford the risk, or do I think they're bluffing and I could just swing in anyway? And, you know, and of course, looting, like I said before with Jace, you know, looting leads to some interesting decisions. Sometimes you'll have four lands in hand and it's very easy to just pitch a land, but a lot of times that's not the case. A lot of times you need to think a few turns ahead while that, you know, you have that copter waiting to deal three damage, and you have all these cards that look good, and you're like, all right, well, what direction is this game going? And I need to figure out if I, you know, lose this card now, will I regret that four turns later? And yeah, it just makes for a lot of interesting games.
Ugh, love it. Very good. Good stuff. Now, to get to where you are, you've obviously played probably thousands of games against hundreds of different people all over the world. And we want to tap into that knowledge and your observations on what is the biggest mistake that you have seen other players make, and then how can we avoid that particular mistake?
So the biggest mistake I've seen other people make, and I used to fall victim to this a lot, is like getting discouraged when the odds aren't in your favor. So like this could mean you go up against an opponent whose deck is heavily favored against your deck, or you go up against an opponent who, I don't know, maybe is a Hall of Famer, and you're just like, oh man, like I just don't want to play this guy. Or in the middle of the game, even if, you know, they curve out perfectly and they have all this great stuff going on, you need to just think about, well, you need to just take a step back and think about, how do I win this? And a lot of people just, they put the blinders on and they don't think about how they could possibly win, and they just think about how bad of a situation they're in. So instead of like reflecting on, you know, like their situation and saying like, oh, well, if I draw this series of cards, I could get out of this. Or if, you know, X, Y, and Z happens, you know, like I'm fine. They just think about, wow, I can't believe he drew that, and I can't believe, you know, he curved that into this and that and the other thing. And they're just like, they get upset. And then when you're upset, you're not playing well and all that. And it just snowballs. And I think that's probably the biggest mistake people make. And it's very similar to poker, where people get sucked out on the river, and then for the next 2 hours they just spew off a bunch of chips because they can't believe that happened and all that.
So what can we do to avoid that? What can we do to, so like I said, you ask yourself, how can I win this? And just keep asking yourself that, stay engaged. Do you have any tips for doing that in the moment? Because in the moment it's tough to sometimes remember that. So is there anything that we can do leading up to it so that we're more conditioned and more prone to think that way, even though things aren't going in our favor?
Yeah, and that's the tough part, right? And it's I'm going to use the poker analogy again, too, where, you know, when I first started playing poker, and when a lot of people who don't play poker a lot have those, you know, one outs, two outers happen to them where, you know, they're a 90% favorite, 95% favorite, and they lose the hand, they don't know how to handle it. And a lot of it comes to experience. And it's just the more you play in poker or Magic, the less you're emotional about it in terms of like, because you just see more situations happen, right? And I think that's very true in Magic as well. You'll just, if you play a lot of games, you'll see everything, right? You'll see the, you know, he's only got one card left in his deck that could save him. And then even after that, he needs to draw another card and then, you know, and they just rattle it off and you're just like, yeah, that's a thing that could happen in Magic. And I think if you just have that experience and you just see it happen more often, you believe it. You believe that these comebacks are possible. You believe that it's just part of the game. And when it happens to you, or if you're down and out and you need that one card, you know, you're there to get it instead of just scooping up your cards when, you know, your opponent gets you to one life on the previous turn or something, right?
Awesome. I love that. And I also love how Magic is a great, it's a great mirror. It's a great opportunity for us to interact with other people and also to see ourselves and to learn about ourselves. So we want to turn that lens inward on you and ask, what's the deepest thing that you've learned about yourself from playing Magic?
I'd say I learned that I can be very, very persistent, and it doesn't always come out in day-to-day life or work or other things, right? It's when Magic puts you to the test and it's just, I just kept chugging along. I think the biggest example of this was on my quest for to get on the Pro Tour. I lost in the finals of maybe three or four PPTQs in a row before I finally won that one against David. And then I lost a few more finals, and then I lost in the last round of the RPTQ. I just kept going. I just said, you know what? It's due. Like, this is due to happen. And I felt that you know, that persistence, that stubbornness, basically, that I'm due to go on the Pro Tour. This is what I'm meant for, and make it happen.
I love it. So when it comes to Magic, what are some shortcomings that you are working on yourself? Like, where can you shore up your gameplay currently?
So I'd say my biggest issue is in-game mistakes, just like missteps, right? Just, I tend to play fast, and I tend to, once I focus on a plan in a game, I tend to ignore minutiae, which most of the time is fine. You know, like, I'll miss some trigger that, you know, maybe like gains me one life when my life total doesn't really matter at the moment or something like that. And I think that's something I could definitely work on, because, again, sometimes it does matter. Sometimes, you know, tapping the wrong land or something like that could end up costing you. But in my mind, like, I just play fast and I'll say, you know, like, oh, here's my plan, here's what I need to do to execute it, and whatever, if I make a couple mistakes on the way, it's fine because I'll most likely win the game anyway. And that's probably true, like 99% of the time it's true, but sometimes it's not. And I'd like to shore up that 1% of the time where, you know, tapping that wrong land ends up costing you or something like that, right?
For sure. And knowing what you know now, if you could go back in time 5 years, what advice would you give yourself?
Well, I guess for me, it'd be longer. If I could go back in time 5 years, I'd say play Magic. But if I could go back in time, I guess, 15 years to when I was playing Magic originally, I'd say jump into the competitive scene. You know, go to as many Grand Prix as you can. Play in as many PTQs as you can. Talk to some pros, learn from the best, and get in there.
I really like that. You know, dive into, and when you mix jump and dive, you get dump. So dive into the competitive scene as much as you can in your area. I think that's great advice. Go to those PPTQs, go to the Grand Prix, and again, have the long perspective. Know that this one event isn't your only chance to make it to the Pro Tour. It's not the only time you're ever gonna be playing with these stakes. Because when you go to your first PPTQ or your first Grand Prix, it's your first one. You know, you haven't seen everything, you haven't experienced it, and so by going consistently and putting more and more of those events under your belt, you get more comfortable with it, and then you start seeing the results as you consistently go and practice and see familiar faces and just be involved in that scene. So I agree with that advice of diving in earlier rather than later, because some people say, oh, when I'm ready, I'll go. Well, you're never going to be ready if you don't go, you know, so just go and get started. Yeah, love it. Absolutely love it. So let's see, how many pro points do you have right now?
25.
Excellent. Oh, that's right. We talked about silver going for gold. Because gold is 33?
35, and I have, even if I do terrible at the next three Pro Tours, I have 34 by the end of the year. So I just need one more point.
One more
and
point.
I'll have gold. Yeah. So really, I'm trying to get four before Kyoto, so that way I get a free flight.
But, okay. Yeah. Excellent. Well, that'd be good. That'd be really good. When you travel around, do you just go for the weekend so it's just you, or do you and your wife go together and you kind of make it a thing? And
most of the time it's just me. I don't have that many days off, and
yeah,
the Pro Tour kind of sucks up a lot of them. So I'll fly into a Grand Prix as late as, you know, 10 in the morning that Saturday and leave at 7 at night on the Sunday, right?
Which you can only do because you have those buys.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. So, hitting the road and doing your thing. Does that affect your game at all? Or you kind of gotten into a rhythm? And
I thought it would, but then my first Grand Prix Top 8 was one where I flew in at 10:30 in the morning to Indianapolis and got like 1 hour of sleep. So.
Wow. So you got it for now. You're rocking and rolling. You got it figured out. And we love seeing past guests go on and do great things. So we will definitely be, you know, looking for you and cheering you on at the Pro Tour. And that's absolutely awesome. Absolutely awesome. So do you have any daily rituals or habits or things that you do that you feel contributes to your success as a Magic player?
I don't really, like, nothing meta, just playing Magic and being able to think about Magic is good too. I have the luxury of having a job where I am not putting in a ton of hours and I'm not having to think about work when I'm away from work and things like that. So it's very easy for me to just, you know, sit down and just play some leagues and, or maybe talk with some of my friends about Magic. And
yeah, that's really good. Leagues help, playing often and talking about it. So just kind of staying involved in the thought process, the theory and the mindset, as well as playing, obviously, like you said, jumping into leagues and just kind of doing that whole bit. I can definitely see how the practice and the reps and the constant involvement, you know, leads to keeping your skills sharp. Now, what advice would you give to new players of the game? You know, we have new people coming into Magic all the time. You know, they're getting stuff at the stores, they're playing casually, and then they go, hey, I want to dive in a little bit more. And they realize, whoa, this can be pretty expensive hobby. So what would you say to these brand new competitive players? How can they really sink their teeth into Magic?
So the first thing I'd say is just don't get discouraged. When I first started playing again in late 2014, and I just played FNMs just like anyone, and I didn't do particularly well. I was new, and I had to learn a lot. And for me, it was just being persistent, and instead of getting upset when you lose, just take it as a challenge. Like, hey, you lost. Like, you could have picked a better deck. You could have played better. You could have turned that loss into a win. How do you go about doing that? And I just kind of took it as a challenge instead of getting disheartened by it. And I know it's not easy to do. Just, you know, have that drive. It's worth it in the end. It's just, it's tough. I know it's tough at the beginning. You know, people have upwards of 23 years of experience more than you. And yeah, it's, and being friendly with people too. Just learn from the people you're losing to. Learn from, you know, the best player at your store is, you know, probably would be decent at a Grand Prix. But, you know, they might not be a pro, but that also might not be, you know, they could be by decision too. They might be busy. You know, I know one of the best players at my local store when I was FNMing was, you know, a lawyer. So he spent a ton of time with work. He just didn't have the time to go to Grand Prix and whatever, right? So
I like that. Take losses as a challenge and be friendly with everyone. You know, the people that you're learning from, the people that you're teaching, your opponent. Just, I like that a lot. Make those connections and learn.
Yeah, just be open-minded. You know, if you lose to someone and they want to give you some advice, don't get upset with them. Like, you don't know. Like, just, you know, take their advice.
Now, is there a time in life that you saw either this or something else that you learned, an aspect of Magic that you learned, kind of make itself manifest that you're like, hey, that's really cool that there's a correlation here, or something like that?
Yeah, for sure. I think when it comes to testing for an event with other players, you learn a level of teamwork that you don't always get elsewhere. And it's kind of cool in that regard. You're just like, everyone's kind of working towards a similar goal. There's, you know, everyone wants to see their friends succeed. So you're just kind of that level of Just camaraderie. It's great.
Awesome. Really, really neat. Once again, everybody out there, if you want to connect with Rob, the best place to do that is on Twitter. He's at Rob_Pisano. You can find him there. Say thanks for being on the show. Ask him questions. Ask him follow-on questions. And yeah, pick his brain. Knows a lot about magic. Obviously, he's persisted. He's put in the work, and he's now seeing the results. So definitely learn from him. So Rob, what is one last parting piece of guidance that you have for us? Either something that you've already said you want to emphasize, or something new you want to leave with us here at the end.
Sure. I think Magic's the best game. Didn't make it clear, but Magic's the best game. It's a great game, and you get what you put into it. And I think if you aren't having fun with Magic, make it fun. I think there's a lot of ways you could be innovative. I love playing Brian DeMars's idea, the Danger Room, which every game's a game. There's no mana screw. There's no flood. You're just playing spells. There's no like one card that's going to take over the game. It's just, you're just playing Magic. That's just one example, or Cube, or, all these other ways you could play Magic that aren't traditional. And, that you could come up with your own. There's no, guidelines. I mean, as long as it's not sanctioned, you could do whatever you want. So I think just be innovative and find a way to make Magic fun if you're not having fun playing Standard or playing, Draft or whatever that your store is doing, right?
Well, Rob, I want to acknowledge you for your contributions to the multiverse, and thank you so much for your time and for sharing your experiences with us. You are a hero among planeswalkers, and it has been a blast chatting with you. May you never be mana screwed, always draw what you need, and depart every plane victorious.
All right, thanks.
So there you have it. Rob Pisano was our guest today. What a great Magic player. So happy he took the time to just chat with us. As always, Prodigies, you can find the show notes at mtgprotutor.com/Rob Pisano, where you will find a synopsis of everything that we talked about, as well as links to any resources that were mentioned. If you like this show, share it with a friend. I encourage you to say, hey, you want to get better at Magic? Here's an episode of MTG Pro Tutor I just listened to. I really like it. I think you'll like it too. Or dig into the archives and find your favorite one and send it to a friend. Just get the word out there. I would love for this community to grow. I really want to help 1,000 players qualify for the Pro Tour. And the first step is getting the word out there and growing this amazing base that we have. Speaking of amazing base, join the MTG Pro Tutor Facebook group. That's where we have a ton of great discussions, where people post their decks to get suggestions. They also talk about their tournament results, how to prepare for upcoming events. We have several past guests of the show there in the group, and that's becoming a better place to reach out to them and connect with them. And it's also where we organize the Pro Tutor Prodigy Sealed League. We just wrapped up the Kaladesh Sealed League, and we are anxiously looking forward to the Aether Revolt Sealed League. So that'll be coming in the next month or so, so stay tuned for that if you want to get involved. Well, thank you so much for joining me on this episode. I'm always happy to be a part of the community. I'm super pumped that you are on this journey to learn, improve, and grow with me. And I can't wait to join you again very soon. Until then, I'm Sean of The Gathering, and we'll see you in the next cast.
This round of MTG Pro Tutor is over. So you don't miss a single episode of MTG Mastery. Be sure to subscribe to the show on your preferred podcast listening service for more exclusive interviews, deck building tips, and elite content. Or visit mtgprotutor.com to stream it straight from the source. We look forward to helping you think and play like a pro.